This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Your number is 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. And the whole state of Louisiana is bonkers over the Fighting Tigers of LSU and Coach O and Joe Burrow. LSU finishing a perfect season, 15-0. Fourth national championship in modern time since 1958 for the Tigers, and it happened at the Louisiana Superdome. All four championship teams have closed their seasons with victories in the dome, except for 1959 when LSU won at the old Sugar Bowl Stadium, Tulane Stadium, and beating Clemson 7-0. And last night it was 42-25. The Tigers were victorious over the Clemson Tigers, who were the defending national champions. Joe Burrow threw for 463 yards, 5 touchdowns. He finishes a remarkable season, and remarkable is certainly downplaying his great year. 60 touchdowns for Joe Burrow this year passing. And in the stands were about 80,000 people, including the President of the United States, the Governor of Louisiana, and the Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, who is joining us, the man who is the Master of Tourism in our state, William Harold Nungesser, who also, by the way, took the oath of office for a second term yesterday. Quite a day for you, Governor Nungesser.
It really was. It was a great day in Louisiana, and topped it off with a great win last night. Incredible crowds in New Orleans. Everything just went down perfectly.
Went down perfectly, and where were you watching the game?
I was in the governor's suite. I was invited to attend, me and my wife share with the governor and his wife. So that was a great treat to be watching it up there.
How's that for bipartisan flair?
You know, hopefully that's a sign of working together for the greater good of Louisiana. You know, the elections in the House and the Senate yesterday, we got some good leadership in both those chambers. And I think if we can come together and work and put Louisiana first, we're going to see great days ahead.
Well, Governor Nungesser, this has to be good for the state as far as showcasing one of our great staples, that being football and college football in particular. I think the whole nation embraced the LSU team this year.
Absolutely. I think not only the positive exposure by such great quality people playing, coaching, and playing for the LSU team, the media exposure around the country and around the world, and the fan base. You know, I got a chance to go to several events before the game in New Orleans, and great fans from Clemson, but there were parties and events all over New Orleans, as far away as Slidell. People took a bus into the game that went down from Clemson. So it had long-reaching effects. Baton Rouge had people staying there. So the tourism aspect, the impact, you know, one estimate was 150 to 175 million, and then some as high as $400 million impact on the economy for Louisiana.
I noticed last night at the La Pavillon Hotel, the lobby of the hotel was decked out in colors with balloons from LSU and Clemson. There were a lot of Clemson people walking the streets, and many of them in the stands. I would guess at least 30,000 people from Clemson showed up for the game. And one of the impressive things, Billy Nungesser, is that LSU took control, and it was apparent the Tigers were going to win, and those Clemson fans stayed to the bitter end to cheer their Warriors as they trotted off the field with their first loss in two seasons.
They sure did. I got a chance to visit my counterpart, Pam Everett, the Lieutenant Governor of South Carolina, was there, and I got a chance to go down to the Clemson suite and visit with them, and about that time it looked like LSU was pulling away, but just very classy fans, and stayed to the end and cheered their team on. It was a great game and a great win for Louisiana.
877-217-5757 is your number, and talk@talklouisiana.org. And Sharon in New Iberia listening says that she was impressed that in your address yesterday, your brief address after taking the oath as Lieutenant Governor, that you acknowledge the quality of the people of Louisiana, and we do have the people as our greatest strength.
You know, that's what yesterday, going around to all these events on the streets, every Louisiana embraced those fans from Clemson, inviting them in to eat and drink. And as I travel the world, like I said yesterday, I ask travel agents, why do you send people to Louisiana? And you hear incredible stories about the lady that pulled some seniors out their chair and taught them the Zydeco dance. And those seniors from Canada say that was their best trip of their life, the way they got treated in Lafayette, taught to dance the Cajun Zydeco dance. But story after story about how Louisianans invite strangers to their backyard to eat crawfish, and they usually leave Louisiana with a friend for life. So Louisianans is the reason those tourism numbers keep going up. People leave here with a warm and fuzzy feeling, usually a friend for life, and they tell people, you got to go visit those people in Louisiana.
877-217-5757. We'll take a call or two for Billy Nungesser, and there is a line open if you'd like to join us. And talk at talklouisiana.org. Chris on Highland says he finds it curious that you as a Republican chose not to go to Trump rallies when he was campaigning for Eddie Rasponi, but sat with a Democratic governor for the LSU-Clemson game. Billy Nungesser, what's going on?
You know, I made a commitment when I got elected that I would not get involved in the governor's race because, unlike other state officials, all my contracts, everything goes to the administration. I've got to be able to work with whoever's governor. And if I put a political career by endorsing the Republican ahead of what's best for all of Louisiana, the people of Louisiana lose. We saw other governors punish lieutenant governors. We were almost closing state parks. Tourism numbers were down. The museums were in horrible shape. And our parks are doing better than ever. Our museums are up 30%. We're doing great. We've had four great years, our best year ever last year in tourism. That would not happen if I couldn't have a good working relationship with the administration and move things quickly through the process. So I'm always going to do what's best for Louisiana, and if people get upset about that, I'm sorry. I've got to look. You know, I don't ask people when they visit here if they're Republican or Democrat. We just want people to visit Louisiana.
Had you ever requested to be in the governor's box before?
Under Bobby, I did once, but I didn't get no ticket.
So the Republican governor said no, and the Democratic governor said yes for Billy Nungesser.
I just didn't hear back from him, that's all.
Okay. Well, sometimes not hearing back is a no. I used to request interviews and not hear back either after he was elected governor. Before that, he was calling me. Hopefully, if you're elected governor, we'll still be talking.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, 877-217-5757. Hugh in Oklahoma City, formerly at LSU. I think this is the 35-year LSU professor, now retired, Hugh Woodstock Buckingham. Good morning to you, sir.
How you doing? Listen, I'm putting in for Ed Ogeron, governor of Louisiana.
Well,
I think he could win.
Yeah, I think Billy Nungesser, he has to be next to Joe Burrow, the most popular guy in the state, and I think Burrow's going to be moving to Ohio very soon. But it is amazing how when you're a successful LSU football coach, that trumps everything.
You're absolutely right. You're a star, and it's hard to beat that. And he's such a quality, great guy. And, you know, besides what you see coaching the Tigers, I see him at so many events supporting the firefighters, first responders, police officers. He gives his time to so many charities and so many good causes. We're just so blessed to have him and his wife as good citizens of Louisiana, besides what he does on the field. They're just great people, and we're so blessed to have him here in Louisiana.
Well, it is nice to see a coach who is 58 years old, a late bloomer, a guy who bounced around, was fired, and had troubles with the law, and here he is back in his home state. He left LSU after less than a week back in 1979 when he was a player, realizing he would never play as long as Ramsey Dardar was there. And here he is, the toast of Tiger Town, and he's got it rolling. They have a great recruiting year, and I think LSU fans fully expect the Tigers to repeat as national champions in 2020.
Well, they sure on a roll, and they got a lot of great young players. So that's the one bad thing about winning like this. They're not going to expect it every year.
Well, it is something that success does have a way of making people want more of the same. next year, I think the championship game is in Miami, and they're believe it or not, Governor, already LSU fans making reservations for Miami in January of 2021.
That's very optimistic. That's pretty good. I like that.
Well, lastly, we do have a caller or two, and we might try to get one in before we part company with the governor, but he did take the oath as lieutenant governor, and a listener asked if you're interested in the 2023 governor's election.
You know, I'm not going to say yes or no. I got a job to do as lieutenant governor, and we'll evaluate where we go from here in good time. But I think it's way too early to try to look at anything other than doing the job that the great people of Louisiana elected me to do yesterday. It is the best job in the world, promoting the state, working with the best people. And I truly look forward to four more years of growing tourism and helping out any way I can.
Well, Governor, thank you for your time today. We'll be talking soon, I hope, and we'll be back after 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming in a bit, Ara Rubion, the annual Jewish Film Festival, is upon us, and the man who calls Baton Rouge home by way of Detroit is preparing, and he will talk about one of the great staples in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or anywhere on the planet, the Jewish Film Festival, coming this week at the Manship Theater. 877-217-5757 is your number. And the whole state is savoring LSU's 42-25 win over Clemson. Tigers have won four national championships in modern time. The first two came over Clemson and Oklahoma, and those were by one touchdown, then Ohio State by two, and then last night a 17-point victory over a team that had won 29 games in a row and was the defending national championship. 877-217-5757, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Fine.
I had wanted to talk about the Fountain Blow State Park issue that's coming up here. I see there's something in the Advocate about a meeting to talk about that very issue.
Well, I'm sure the governor will be back soon, so we'll talk to him very soon about this. But, Phil, I'm sure you have some thoughts about what happened last night at the Louisiana Superdome.
Oh, my goodness. You can walk outside, and it's like, you know, we have this mist because it's so humid. But guess what? That humidity is just Louisiana as a state champion. It's like this fog of victory, and it's pretty wonderful. It's pretty wonderful.
Kind of a sadistic laugh there from Phil. It's savoring the trampling of the Tigers from Clemson.
Well, I think my best moment was seeing Nick Saban standing there. You know, and my God, he looks like 20 years older. You know, and he was always, I think, a miserable person under those suits. But that was a nice jab of, you know, Schadenfreude. That's a great word. I love that word.
Right.
But anyway, we've been having a good year. I mean, for January in Louisiana, it's been doing pretty well. And I just got to give myself a plug for my career in my old age. I'm working on a film again. So I'm having a good time working in Baton Rouge on an independent feature. So.
All right, well, maybe you'll be at the Jewish Film Festival in 2021. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Now, the weather was really bad as far as fog, both going to New Orleans yesterday and coming back early this morning. I can attest the interstate west was closed, I-10, and those of us going to Baton Rouge had to divert to Airline Highway, and it was well over a 2.5-hour drive this morning through the fog and the traffic, but I'm here and even managed to go to Louis before coming this way, so all is well in the world. And the campus is rather quiet this morning, as you can imagine. LSU fans were reveling into the early hours of the morning. Now, the LSU student body is largely conservative. Don't think there's much question about that. The fans are overwhelmingly white, and I sat in the stands last night at the plaza level, and I would say there were 5,000 people within eyeshot, and I saw zero African-Americans in the stands, in the plaza level, not one. Now, I might have missed somebody, but if there were black people there, there were very few, and that's a statement, and it's something that not to accent a negative, it is a time in Louisiana, in the Deep South, where white people are rooting for largely black players. The quarterback, of course, the great Joe Burrow, is white, but most of the players, about 80% or more of them, are African American. So that is a good thing. But the biggest ovation that I heard last night, the biggest ovation from both LSU and Clemson fans came when the President of the United States took the field, Donald John Trump, before the game. It was overwhelmingly loud in that dome, and there were very few boos. I heard a few of those too, but mostly raucous cheers for the President of the United States, who is running for re-election, and he received over 80% of the white vote in Louisiana in 2016, and will do so again. And most of the fans there, as stated earlier, were Caucasian. And they loved their president. And I saw and I've on Facebook all these shots. That's my president. And both he and Melania looked good as they walked the field. And unlike Washington, D.C., when the president was booed at a World Series game between the Astros and the Nationals, this time it was a love fest for Donald John Trump. He certainly chose the right spot to come. And this was on a day yesterday morning that started with the president photoshopping an image of Senator Chuck Schumer of New York and Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California wearing a turban and a headscarf in front of an Iranian flag, claiming it showed the corrupted Dems, these are his words, the corrupted Dems trying their best to come to the Ayatollah's rescue. And then Nancy Pelosi fake news is the hashtag. The retweeted image was the most extreme version of a sentiment that Mr. Trump spent the morning advancing by retweeting criticism of Speaker Pelosi and suggesting she was a supporter of the Iranian government. The New York Times reports that Nancy Pelosi has criticized the Trump administration for the killing of Major General Qasem Soleimani, Iran's most important general, on January 3rd, saying it risked a dangerous escalation of violence and was based on questionable intelligence. The president's barrage of Twitter posts targeting her appeared to be an attempt to undercut her credibility the same week she's expected to send two articles of impeachment against the president to the Senate. The tweet was also a reminder of the way Mr. Trump has harnessed fears of Muslims and terrorism for his own political purposes in the past. This isn't a straight news story, by the way. It's not a commentary. Responding on Twitter himself, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, asked President Trump, "How low can you go?" But the president is loved in Louisiana by a majority of the citizens, and this is a majority. He received only 46% of the votes nationwide, 46.1, meaning 53.9% of the people in this country voted for somebody else in 2016, but Donald Trump won the election. And the Real Clear Politics conflation of polls has him at 44.4% now, within range of where he was 4 years ago when he won the election. It's highly probable that Donald Trump will not win the popular vote again. In fact, he may lose by more than the 2.9 million he lost to Hillary Clinton in the overall vote in 2016. But he could get 43 or 44% of the votes and win the election. And he, of course, is waiting to see who his opponent is. The latest poll from Iowa shows that Joe Biden has now moved in front. That the polls in Iowa have been all over the place. One a few weeks ago had Pete Buttigieg in front. Another one last week had Bernie Sanders ahead. Earlier it was Elizabeth Warren, and now it's Joe Biden. And Joe Biden, who is 77 years old, may be the Democrats' best shot to beat Trump. Not necessarily the best candidate, but nonetheless, he is the most electable if national polls are accurate. But a USA Today poll a few weeks ago showed the president at this point beating any of his Democratic rivals. And the economy will be an issue, no doubt, and the stock market is doing well. The economy is doing reasonably well despite a deficit that will exceed $1 trillion, something the president promised to balance the budget, but most people are not paying attention to that. And today the Dow is hovering right at 29,000, and the president is saying that he is responsible for the economic well-being of the country. And most people in Louisiana, most of those wearing purple and gold last night, were highly supportive of him. And this is not new for a Republican candidate. I recall in 1991 when LSU played Florida State at Tiger Stadium, David Duke went into the stands and was hoisted with people cheering Duke, Duke, Duke from the LSU fraternity section. A sea of fraternity young men cheering on David Ernest Duke, who in 1991 received 55% of the white votes in his race against Edwin Washington Edwards. And if not for the wisdom of the black voters in our state, we would have had U.S. Senator David Duke and Governor David Ernest Duke. We'll be back after this timeout to talk about the Jewish Film Festival with Ara Rubion. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ara Rubion is with us. He is the man who is continuing the flame started by his father-in-law, Harvey Hoffman, on the Jewish Film Festival. The 14th annual festival starts this week and started in 2007 when LSU last won a national championship in football, beating Ohio State 38-24. And Ara Rubion is here all these years later, and we're going to preview some of the festivities coming at the 14th Annual Festival at the Manship Theater. You can go to manshiptheater.org, by the way, to find out more about tickets and what is showing. But Ara came this way about 16 years ago. He fell in love with somebody familiar with WRKF listeners, with a magnificent voice that you hear often, Julie Hoffman. And Julie is your bride.
Yes. I had the good sense to marry Harvey and Paula's daughter. And it has been great. I had never been to Louisiana before I moved here to get married. And I love it. I love it here. The South very often is, some of the best things in the country come from the South. And I've enjoyed it all.
Well, you came from Detroit, and I know you are a big sports fan for the teams in Detroit, which have been long-suffering for
yes.
The Lions. I don't think have won a title since 57. Right?
They haven't won a playoff game since the early 90s.
And the Tigers have been up and down, but mostly down.
Yep.
And I like it that you stay loyal to your team. And what I don't like amid all this wonderful hoopla about LSU is the fans that are jumping on the bandwagon right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
And I hate it when fans use the pronoun we. We weren't on the field last night.
No.
We didn't play.
No.
But nonetheless, it makes it all the more sweet when you've stuck with a team through the years
yeah.
and you've seen them go through ups and downs.
It's true. If the weather had been a little bit colder this morning, I would have worn my Detroit Tigers on-field official cap because I like to do that when it gets cold out.
And I bet that you have listened a time or two when we've talked to Dennis Dale McClain, the great
oh, yeah.
right-hander for the
oh, yeah.
Tigers.
I was watching the game on TV as a kid when he won his 30th game.
I remember that, too. It was game yeah. of the week, Saturday
yep.
afternoon.
Yep.
September 14th, 1968.
Okay, you're scaring me now, Jim.
Beat the Oakland A's.
Yes.
Kurt Gowdy was the announcer.
Who was the rookie who hit two home runs in that game?
For the Tigers?
No, for the A's.
Reggie Jackson?
Yep.
Reggie
You're
Jackson?
One of the few people I know that could answer that question.
Reginald Martinez Jackson.
Yeah.
Who was quite a player, Hall of Famer, and
yep.
Had a great career. And in 1968, he hit two home runs off Denny McClain.
I think I know it was two home runs, and they might have both been off McClain.
McClain gave up a lot of home runs, and that was the amazing thing. He's mentioned that in 1968, when he won all those games, he gave up over 30 home runs and had an ERA of 1.96. But let's go to the Jewish
sure.
Film Festival. The real deal, as Judy Bergeron reports in The Advocate, dramas and does to make you feel something. What's happening starting Wednesday, as in tomorrow night at the Manship Theater January 15th.
Well, we have a couple of things happening. One of them, of course, is we're showing a movie called The Museum, which is a documentary about the Israel Museum, which is one of the crown jewels of the world in terms of the collection that they have, the antiquities, the paintings, the sculptures. And the film is interesting not so much because it shows the collection, but because it kind of pulls the curtain aside and you get to see and hear from people who work there. The American Museum director, the singing security guard, the Jerusalemite curator, the Haredi Kashrut inspector, the Palestinian guide, and so on and so forth, which to me is fascinating, hearing people tell their story. Following the film, Kenneth Hoffman, who's the executive director of the Museum of the Southern Jewish Experience in New Orleans, is going to give a talk. The museum is slated to open this year, and so we thought that would be a great add-on to hear where the museum is at right now in its development.
The Museum, a documentary about the Israel Museum, opens 7 o'clock tomorrow night at the Manship Theater. So that's the opening act, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And then you're on for Thursday?
Right. Thursday, we have a kind of a dark comedy, political comedy, about an episode in Israeli history at a time in the early 80s when Jews who came from Spain and Portugal and the Middle East and North Africa really were almost disenfranchised because they had no political party that represented them. This movie tells a somewhat accurate story, I'm sure some of the names have been changed, of the founding of what we now know of as the Shas Party, which is, I think, the fourth largest party in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, and tells the story of how it was founded, the ups and downs, the personalities, and it does it with a kind of a dark comedy flair. I thought it was a perfect pick, given that this year is an election year in the U.S., and this year is probably going to be another election year in Israel. So, especially for people who are political junkies like I am, I thought this would be an interesting insight into another country and how that works.
The Unorthodox, 7 o'clock Thursday, the 16th, at the Manship Theater, depicting the 1980s formation of an upstart Israeli party representing the interests of Sephardic Jews. Then you take the Sabbath off.
Mm-hmm.
And you return?
On Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m., we're showing a movie. It's a documentary called Fiddler, A Miracle of Miracles. And it's the story of a legendary, much-beloved stage musical, screen musical, Fiddler on the Roof. It kind of goes behind the scenes, talks through archival interviews with people who wrote the show, staged the show, wrote the movie, directed the movie. There are interviews that are fascinating. If you have ever seen the film, you probably loved it. And so this is a film that will really kind of fill you up with a lot of good feelings. And we've had a tremendous response to it locally.
Very good. Saturday's always a big night.
Yep.
Okay, and you don't stop there.
No. On Sunday at 3 p.m., that's our one matinee during the festival, we're showing a movie called Redemption, which is a story about a single father and his daughter who is ill with cancer. She's young. She's probably about 7, 8, 9 years old. And he is a former rock star and now kind of stuck working in a grocery store to make ends meet with his daughter, and trying to support her medical bills, and then gets it into his head that he's going to get the band back together. And so it tells the story of each of the band members and their relationship with the lead in the movie. And I have to tell you, the thing that surprised me was how good the music is in this movie. It stands on its own. I don't know how many of the actors in the movie do their own singing and playing of instruments, but just on the level of enjoying the music, this is a really good movie.
And for those who would like to attend, again, you can go to manshiptheater.org. Tickets are $11.50, right?
$11.50. If you join the Jewish Film Festival VIP Movie Club, you can go to our website, brjff.com. You'll see a link there. We're giving away, people who join the club get 2 free tickets to opening night. They get $2 off the Thursday, Saturday, Sunday show. And we're giving away free drink and snack coupons at the Manship.
You sent me a link. I thought I recognized the voice.
Yes. We put that together in about a week. I'd been thinking about it for a number of months. And the way I write is that it all kind of, you know, lands on a page and then you shape it. And then I think it was, who was it? Tom Hanks said, you make a movie shot by shot. And I started putting together the shots, and we ended up with a 2.5-minute short that answered a question you've asked me many times, what is a Jewish movie? And I've been thinking about that, and it's only taken me about 10 years to, you know, get it down. And Julie narrated it, and we had a lot of fun with it, and we're showing it on opening night before the main movie, and then we're going to show it again on Saturday night.
But it can be a Jewish movie for various reasons.
For various reasons, that's correct. The most important thing for us is that it tells a story that generates some empathy in the audience and makes you feel something for the people that you're watching, but also maybe recognize that you have something in common with the story that you're watching.
All right. A listener notes that Rabbi Weinstein, Barry Weinstein, Barry in Mid-City, was one of the clergy at the inauguration for Governor Edwards yesterday wearing an LSU baseball
cap. Yep.
I love Barry. But many people in this community really look forward to this event every year, and it's not just Jewish people, of course.
No. In fact, the majority of our audience is non-Jewish. I always joke and say we love the audience. They come out every year. We love the audience because none of this would be necessary without them. And so we're looking forward to seeing them all again. And we hope everyone that's listening right now will find their way to the theater on one or all of the dates.
877-217-5757, your number. Talk@talklouisiana.org. We're going to spend a few more minutes with Ara Rubion, and then we're slated to hear from Erica Edelson. Her book is Beyond Contempt, How Liberals Can Communicate Across the Great Divide. Tom Hartman, New York Times bestselling author, calls it brilliant. And we'll be back after this brief pause with more Talk Louisiana right here. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ara Rubion is with us. The Jewish Film Festival is starting tomorrow night at the Manship Theater, manshiptheater.org, and it'll play with features tomorrow on Thursday as well as on Saturday and Sunday. And it has become one of the great entities in our community in its 14 years in our community. And Ara, as mentioned, is a native of Detroit. He came here about 16 years ago, just before the Jewish Film Festival began, and he's been a big part of this. And in Baton Rouge, we've noted the overall population of the Jewish community is quite small. And that's why most of your attendees are not Jewish. And for those who have followed the Middle East through the years, Israel is in a similar situation. It's a very small country, the smallest country in the Middle East. And it's surrounded by neighbors that are much larger and often hostile. And it's a difficult world in which we live, and that is truly the center of the universe.
I'm going to use a football analogy on this, you know, great day after, and I want people to imagine the playing field at Tiger Stadium as huge as the stands are, and it's a, you know, standard football field size. Now imagine in your mind a matchbook, and put that matchbook down on the 50-yard line. That matchbook in relation to the football field is the size of Israel compared to the Middle East. And that's where it all starts. The context for everything that happens in the Middle East regarding Israel is that idea. And so it's not something that Americans often are able to wrap their heads around, but it would be instructive to start there.
And Jerusalem is a city about the size of Baton Rouge.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't think they have a million people.
Okay.
But yet, when I say the center of the universe, Howard Cosell used to say New York was the center of the universe, and it is the center of the universe in our country. Los Angeles is a close second, but I think when it comes to the world center, there's no doubt Jerusalem is the place.
Well, it's the capital of three major religions. I wouldn't say it's capital is probably overstating. It certainly is for Jewish people. Christians like to call it the Holy Land, and Muslims also consider the Temple Mount, for example, is like the third or fourth holiest place on earth. There really aren't any other cities on the planet that have that kind of profile.
All right. You can learn much more about Jewish culture and history by going to the Jewish Film Festival, manshiptheater.org, and a listener does ask if this year will be a Q&A session that you've had some in the past.
On Wednesday evening with tomorrow night. Kenneth Hoffman.
Kenneth,
right?
That's right. You mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
No relation?
He happens to be my wife's brother, yes.
And I would say very close relation.
Yes, right. I saw him just a couple of weeks ago.
As in brother-in-law.
Yes,
Kenneth, where does he live?
He lives in New Orleans.
Does he?
With his wife and family.
Okay, well then, yeah, okay. Well, and the movie showing tomorrow night to start it all that we mentioned earlier, I know you're very proud of the opening night selection. It is one that you probably give a lot of thought about what goes first. And it is The Museum, which is about the Israel Museum. Hope it's at 7 o'clock tomorrow night in the Manship
Theater.
Hope
to see you there.
And you'll see Ara Rubion, Julie Hoffman, and Kenneth Hoffman. And there will be a Q&A after that feature. Thank you, Ara, and congratulations.
Thanks, Jim.
We're joined now by Erica Edelson, a writer, community activist, certified powerful non-defensive communication facilitator, former human rights attorney. She's advocated in support of welfare recipients, prisoners, indigenous people, immigrants, and environmental activists. And she has a book about where we are on the political horizon, Beyond Contempt, How Liberals Can Communicate Across the Great Divide. And good morning to you, Erica
Good
Edelson.
Morning.
Nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
Well, this is a book that, of course, liberals and progressives probably should embrace, and given an attempt to show us how to communicate respectfully, passionately, and effectively across the political divide. How difficult is that to do in these times?
It is difficult, which is why I wrote the book. It's definitely been a journey for myself as someone who's a former attorney, very trained in the adversarial method of trying to win an argument or a case at all costs. And it's also, I think it's very hard for liberals and progressives right now because we are very authentically upset, distressed, and grief-stricken and heartbroken at times at what's going on in this country in the past few years. And when you feel so intensely about something, it can be hard not to want to be punitive and lash out at people who see things differently. And it can be hard not to see ourselves as being better people because we have the beliefs we do, and we see our beliefs as so much better as, you know, all the wrong-headed, deluded fools who are on the more conservative side of the spectrum. And so that's why I ended up kind of homing in on this attitude of contempt that I see as very, very prevalent on all sides. I want to be clear, like it's that is across the political spectrum. But I'm kind of focusing on my home team, where I see our contempt toward Trump supporters really shooting ourselves in the foot because it creates a dynamic where instead of inviting people to have an open mind and hear what we have to say and either take it or leave it, when we lead with contempt, we trigger really huge amounts of defensiveness and hostility and a desire just to shut us down, close us out, or worse, you know, lash back with their own contempt. And that kind of creates a sort of boomerang effect, a contempt spiral, which is where we're at in this country politically now.
The book is Beyond Contempt from Erica Edelson. I mentioned a little while ago that the president, who finished his night in New Orleans at the championship game, he started his day by sharing a doctored photo of Senator Chuck Schumer and Speaker Nancy Pelosi wearing a turban and a headscarf. Now, how do you respond to something like that? Do you just roll over and take it, or do you fight back?
Well, I think that there's a third choice. I definitely would want to respond to something like that, but rather than so much fighting back, I think that if I were in a position to say something to the president or to the general public, what I would want to focus on is simply the impact of what a tweet like that can have in terms of perpetuating stereotypes and hostility toward, well, I'm going to say toward Muslims, but did you say the picture was of wearing a turban?
Yes.
Right, and probably there are people who believe that Muslims wear turbans, but in any event, stereotypes toward and hostility toward religious minorities in this country and deepening the partisan divide between Republicans and Democrats. You know, I try and follow a quote that I came across when I was researching my book by the Buddhist monk and peace activist Thich Nhat Hanh, and he says, "Speak the truth, but not to punish." And those seven words, I mean, that's pretty much like my entire book in seven words. I almost realized I didn't even need to write the book because in a lot of ways that says it all. We can say what is absolutely true for us without sugarcoating it or trying to, trying to water down or speak a half-truth to appease the other person. We speak the truth, but not to punish. You don't have to lash back, you know, with some big smackdown that's going to go viral on YouTube and make everyone on your team be like, yeah, yeah, really, really happy. You got them. But what's the part of the truth that can speak to people who didn't already see things exactly the same way that you do? So speak the truth, but not to punish. That has become my mantra.
Erica, you say humans are evolutionary wired to categorize people and favor those we've sorted into our group, and this likely explains why people in most countries, including the U.S., significantly overestimate the percentage of the population who are immigrants because they're on the alert to spot differences.
Yes.
So are we always going to have a tendency to look down upon people who are not like us?
You know, I think that the tendency to sort doesn't automatically come with it a tendency to see, we can perceive difference, but that doesn't mean that the difference has to be either positive or negative. I think that aspect is very much a product of cultural conditioning. That's not something that I'm an expert in, so there's not much more I can say. But I mentioned it in the book because I think that for very good reason, one of the things that liberals and progressives and immigrants and people of color in this country are most upset about is the kind of vilification and hate and racism and nativism that's really ramped up a lot and that President Trump seems to be giving permission for people. And so I talked about the tendency to sort just to kind of give liberals and progressives a way in to a conversation, a little bit of understanding of how it is that people do focus on difference, that there is like a bit of a natural element in it.
Well, we do have to roll, but the book is Beyond Contempt, How Liberals Can Communicate Across the Great Divide from Erica Edelson. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned.